Hello, this is Paul Green, political analyst for WGN Radio and chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Today at the City Club, we had Dean Angelo, president of the Fraternal Order of Police in Chicago, and he gave a rather lengthy speech discussing all aspects of policing in 2016. Some of the key topics he covered was the police facing disrespect in all parts of America, but especially in Chicago. He then mentioned that police deaths by guns are up 17% over last year, but perhaps one of his most important and probably controversial statements was he put a chart on his slideshow that showed that 10 wards in the city of Chicago have 62% of all arrests in the city and over 50% of all the homicides. And it was startling facts. And then he ended by saying, if you're a police officer in those communities, you're going to run into a lot of allegations. And it is in those areas where almost all of the police misconduct and all the other publicity comes from. All in all, he gave a rather lengthy, but it was a fairly articulate statement about the problems Chicago police officers are facing in 2016.
Yeah, I've gone through some of the earlier presentations that take place in this venue, and to stand here where some of those some of our most prestigious politicians and community workers and activists and even Rocky Wirtz. My God, Rocky Wirtz has been here. So how much better does it get than Rocky Wirtz? There was a president as well. President Obama was here, but, you know, Rocky Wirtz, Mr. Blackhawk himself. And I'm glad I think you saved the mayor's podium for me, so this one fits. Jim, all right, and Franzek's in the room too, right? All kidding aside, it's very humbling, and we're very proud to be here. Jay mentioned my dad. He's the reason why I'm up here. Dragged me out of bed to take that test. In 1975, I said, who wants to be a cop, Dad? Are you kidding me? And who would have known? Our son wears my dad's star number, the number that I wore. So my dad was lucky enough, or we were lucky enough, to have my dad pin it on him almost 10 years ago now. I'm sure my wife really wants to hear me talk more, so she kind of came out here as kind of forced because someone had to drive the girls. They don't like to drive on the highway. Dominic, our number two son, probably tell you he's got the best job in the world. He's a head wrestling coach at his alma mater at St. Pat's, and where we all went, all the boys in the Angelo family went to St. Pat's. Our daughters are both teachers, Amanda, junior high, and Michelle, a third grade teacher. Amanda might be the next one on the Chicago Police Department from our clan, but we have a lot more talking to do before that happens. My oldest brother, Bill, is here with some of his Sigma Pi friends from a long, long time ago. And my sister, Antoinette, and her husband, Ralph, who's also a retired Chicago police officer, made the trip as well. And our cousin, Tom, who's a retired policeman. A lot of Angelos at the trough of the city. But Tom was my FTO for one day. They would only let us be in the same car once. And Tommy, that was enough. So. We have our lodge reps that snuck out of the office. We also have the best staff in the world that's here. They work their backsides off for our members each and every day. And if I can get them to stand up, please. Ladies. You have no idea what they do every day. Actually, neither do I, but I just let them have it. My boss, Doreen, I've got a boss at work, I've got the other boss at home, now I've got nowhere to go. But it's a big car they gave me, so I can kind of sleep in the back seat if things get really bad. Statewide FOP representatives are here, trusted friends, longtime associates that we've come to trust and help us get through some very difficult times are all here. And I want to thank them for taking time out of their busy schedule to spend a few minutes with us. I see Wayne Johnson out there. I got to say hi to Wayne. He's the reason why I went back to school, so it's all his fault. You got to do this, Dean. Remember that? Huh? But when we were first invited, we wanted to trying to figure out how do we get so much information that's going on in the city of Chicago into this type of a forum, with the issues with police officers, the issues with crime, the issues with politics in general, the anti-police movement that's taken hold. There's so much to talk about. We have nonstop issues in our office. So I changed this presentation this morning again. Being a academic, I can stay up here for about 3 hours. Usually my lectures are about three and a half hours, but I don't think you want to stick around for dinner, so I had to trim it and then trim it again and then trim it again, and we'll see how far it goes now. But I think we've decided on a couple of things that will be interesting, hopefully educational to the point, and gets you engaged in something that I don't think you expected with me being up here. Right now, police officers throughout our country and throughout the world, and especially in the city of Chicago, are facing an enormous level of confrontation, a level of disrespect that we've not seen. In some areas, legislative and organizational abandonment has become commonplace. When we ask some of our retired, more senior officers, whether it's here in Chicago or elsewhere throughout the country, they tell us that they've never witnessed anything like what our officers are facing out there today. And you got to remember that these are the men that were involved in the civil unrest and the civil rights, the riots that occurred after Martin Luther King's assassination, the Democratic Convention, and they've seen some things, and they cannot believe what these officers are being subjected to in 2016. As recently as February, the Washington Post reported that direct attacks on police officers are on the rise. So are ambush attacks. National Law Enforcement Memorial Foundation reported that firearm fatalities of police officers are up 17% from this time compared to last year. On an average, 151 police officers die in the line of duty each and every year. We go out to Washington and we witness the families and participate in that type of event. It's incredibly moving. If you ever have a chance, I suggest somebody, you all put that on your bucket list. For more than a year now, Chicago police officers have been facing another level of disrespect, likes of which I've not seen in my 36 years. In some areas of our city, nearly every contact with the public is met with a level of confrontation, an array of cell phones videotaping the event, hoping for a payday, and officers are regularly baited and literally called every name in the book just to get a rise out of them, just to get a reaction. I can't wait for the city to release our body camera videos unedited so you get to see what they see and what they deal with. When the videos of police officer encounters are released, when they get to the media, no offense to the media, but they get played as if it's a Super Bowl winning touchdown. It's played over and over and over again until it's embedded in the audience's mind. If it's not edited before it gets to the media, they edit it just enough to give somebody that oh my gosh moment. You can't have people changing channels now, can we? So you got to keep them glued to the tube, so to speak. As soon as we get the morning papers, we look for the next headline. Every day there's a headline in the paper. People that have never written about policing are now looking for the byline. They call the office regularly. We try not to turn down interviews because we'd like to get our message out. Even though we sit in front of a camera for 20, 30 minutes, we might get 5 seconds on the 6 o'clock news. But that 5 seconds gets part of our message out. Thor, you can tell them that, right? We also have, and everybody and their sister seems to be wanting to implement changes in policing. And it's a dangerous time to think that those implementations are credible if they come from people that have never strapped a weapon on. We have a movement now that people want to mandate what goes on a beat car or in a beat car without talking to beat officers, to not realize how what they want to do is going to impact that officer's day. Is it going to put them at a greater level of risk? Is it going to impact their ability to deal with the level of violence out there we've not seen since I was in gang crimes in the 80s and 90s? We are at a very difficult and a very sensitive time with our city and with our violence. We have to get some type of response or some type of involvement, we think, from police officers that actually do the job, as opposed to, and no offense to the city council or no offense to the electeds in Springfield, but you need to ask real police what they should be doing or how they can go about doing their job better, as opposed to legislate from on high and then wait for the results. We can see what's going on with some of those results now. When an officer hits somebody, it makes a headline. They get stripped from their police powers, or they get put on a timeout, an administrative timeout for 30 days or more. When an officer gets hit, felony charges are very slow to come, if they come at all. Either way, the perception of a lot of police officers in the city of Chicago is that nobody has their backs, that they've become a second-class citizen. We know how perceptions work, and that's their perception. Perceptions are real to people, and this is how they feel. And I'm here to share that feeling with you. They also believe that the least type of confrontation or physical contact will wind them will eventually get them involved, and they will wind up on the receiving end of this new anti-police correctness program that's moving. And that's what's happening, where we see some sort of pullback. There are occasions that we get and receive encouragement from the upper echelon at times to continue to speak out on behalf of our officers because, politically speaking, they might not be able to. We welcome that. This is our job. This is my job, one of my many responsibilities to support our officers. I welcome that. I embrace that. We don't shy away from it. And it's fine with us. But it sometimes appears that the FOP is the only one speaking out for the policeman. And that's got to change. We've got friends in the media, but it doesn't sell. We've got friends at newspapers, but it doesn't sell papers. We need to change that message. We'll work with you as much as we can to try to get the information out, the correct information. However, there needs to come a time, and it needs to come sooner than later, for others in the media, in elected office, and the silent majority of Chicagoans to recognize and support the commitment of the women and the men of the Chicago Police Department. We need everybody to speak up and reinforce our officers' commitments, and we need it to be done on a much more regular basis. There's a deafening silence out there right now when it comes to supporting the dedicated people who make up this department, and that's really got to change. I did want to get a little bit of information out there about the FOP. 100 years ago, started in Pitt, a couple of police officers arguing about working conditions and long hours. Officers Nagel and Toole got together with 21 other people to start the National Lodge, Fort Pitt, Lodge number one. We are all out there this summer celebrating our 100th anniversary, and Pittsburgh did an amazing job putting on a 100th birthday party. We've got over 325,000 members nationally. Locally, Chicago was chartered in 1963, instantly became the largest FOP lodge in the country, so I'm very proud to represent the largest FOP in the nation. We got our first contract from John Dineen and Jane Byrne in 1981. It was 50 pages long. It's a tiny little book. Ours, it's now in the ninth edition, and I think it's about 160 pages, right, Kath? Yeah, there's only a few of us actually read it, right? That's one of Kathy's main things. Not everybody reads the contract. But it continues to safeguard the employee rights, the wages and safety and insurance, and many other work-related benefits that the women and men of Chicago Police Department so rightly deserve. I could do an entire luncheon on the contract, but we'll move on. This is our West Side. And I wanted to talk about this for several different reasons. We're going to hear more about this. After Dr. King's assassination, cities around the country broke out into riots. Fires started. Neighborhoods got burned. And Chicago was no exception. Fires were set, and the damage is still visible. And no more visible than on our West Side. There are too many vacant lots to count. There's too many abandoned buildings to tally. And they've all been there since the 1960s. Businesses have left. Shopping is limited and overpriced. The merchandise is costly and really poor quality. Groceries, fresh groceries, are nearly hard to find unless you have transportation to shop somewhere outside the neighborhood. Very few businesses are run or owned by local residents. It's one of our poorest communities in Chicago. My concern, and it should be everybody's concern, is that there are four generations of people walking through these empty lots, walking past these burned-out buildings or abandoned buildings, and they're still there. How many more generations do you have to walk through those neighborhoods with that level of despair? It's 2016. It's been 50 years. You would think by now something would have been done. And the reason I bring this up is that I did a study. Well, I'll get to the study, but I wanted to show this from the United Nations of Drugs and Crimes. It's their executive report. You can see it reads, high levels of crime are both a major cause and a result of poverty, insecurity, and underdevelopment. Crime drives away businesses, erodes human capital, and destabilizes society. Targeted actions are needed. Crime prevention policies should be combined with economic and social development and democratic governance based on a rule of law. Someone needs to ask why. Someone needs to do something. You can't police your way out of this. But you look to the police to deal with the fallout. Let's stay here for a moment. We cannot get people jobs. We cannot fix marriages. We cannot raise children. We cannot cure your psychoses, your drug addiction, and we certainly can't arrest our way out of this. There needs to be something and someone to address the generations of abandoned buildings and these empty lots. There's too much at stake. Why are we discussing poverty? Poverty, because there's so many studies out there that speak of poverty and its relationship to drugs, guns, gangs, narcotics, homicides. I've done my own mini study, so to speak, go figure. Using CPD official stats, I've collected data on narcotic arrests, gun arrests, and murders. And I've looked at these three areas with a direct relationship to the poorest areas of Chicago. Areas with the highest level of unemployment and also with the highest level of violent crime. And I've done it ward by ward. So if you see your ward up there, you know who to call. This is our first slide. It's a little busy, but these are the top 10 wards in narcotic arrests. In 2015, the Chicago police officers made 21,156 narcotic arrests. It's a lot. Some busy police out there. The top 10 wards are responsible for 62%, or 13,156 of those arrests. What I've done is I've taken a map that talks about unemployment, and I've highlighted the top 20 wards of our city. The top 20 wards, and this map is from the Chicago, being an academic, you need to cite, right? It comes from the Chicago Neighborhoods Assets Plan and Trends. It's a project of the Chicago Community Trust It's a summary of the West Side from 2015. The top 20 wards are responsible for 89% of the narcotic arrests that took place in 2015. Or 18,849 narcotic arrests occurred in 20 wards in Chicago. And you can see where the unemployment is, or the underemployment. People need to work. These are our gun arrests. Chicago police are extremely busy with gun arrests. We know that they take more weapons off the street than New York, L.A. combined every year. And in 2015, they made 3,420 gun arrests. Top 10 wards, again, were responsible for 58% of the weapon recoveries, or the weapon, or the gun arrests, I should say, or 1,964. When we look at the map, no surprise. These are the top 20 wards for gun arrests. The top 20 wards are responsible for 85% of gun arrests. It's 2,908. It's 85% in 20 of our wards. And the worst category is the murder rate, or the homicides. In 2015, we recorded 456, depending on who you ask. Some are reclassified as death investigations, right, Dan? Top 10 wards, 53%, or 243 murders. When we look at our map, again, no surprise. The top 20 wards of Chicago had 84%, 84.6, almost 85% of all murders that occurred in those same 20 wards. This is a pattern. This is something that could be addressed. This is not too difficult for people to recognize. Very difficult to fix. But recognition is the first step, yeah? As with any examination, these types of statistics and these numbers and these maps should be used to further develop the next arm of this study. Again, it's a mini study, but it does speak loud. Not that long ago, there was a lot of outcry about the 404 police officer-involved shootings that occurred in the city of Chicago over an eight-year period of time. It was misrepresented in the media that everyone that was shot died, or that everyone that was shot was unarmed, both of which are untrue. But it was in the media, so a lot of people believed it, and they ran with it. What wasn't in the media, and these are official statistics, was that over the same period of time, the Chicago police officers took, 87,000 plus guns off the street in 8 years? That's incredible. They locked up over 3,700 people. Oh, that's supposed to be 3,700, I'm sorry. See what happens when you change things over and over again? Door, you didn't proof. I'm sorry, I should have asked. It's my fault, I didn't ask this morning. That's what I get. I should know better, I'm sorry. It's 3,740. You lose the 8. Every one of those arrests could have resulted in a police-involved shooting. That's an individual armed with a gun and a police officer taking them into custody. Yet, I say we only had 404 police-involved shootings. We have some very good officers out there. They know their job. They know how to go home. And finally, one of the statistics that no one ever talks about is that over the same eight-year period, over 13,000 policemen were battered while they were working. That's unacceptable. This is what we are facing today. This number is going to go up. That annual number will increase. I can guarantee by the end of this year, we will see more than that annual average. Things are upside down. And we are the only ones that can do something about it. Problem is, when the FOP talks about it, it's just the FOP. What do you expect them to say? But But we need support. We need people to come with us. We need people to speak up. There's a individual, a Salvadorian cartoonist, that came up with some of these sketches 2 years ago from the turmoil that they're suffering in Salvador. The caption reads, "The world is upside down," where an offender is being catered to and the victim's dying on the side. When they made or attempted to make a truce with the criminal element in their area, the one side talks about the pre-truce and the bullseye is post-truce. So you put a bullseye in your police because you let the criminal run free. We're this close. And finally, my favorite I included in the magazine, our monthly magazine, is the little gangbanger getting patted on the head while he's in possession of a firearm and a police officer is being carted off to jail. We're right here, right now. And like I said, things have got to change. We've got officers that are out there working right now. They take, what did the superintendent say a couple of weeks ago, how many weapons we took off the street? They are not stopping their job. They are not, there's something called the Ferguson effect. No one is backing off of calls for service. No one is not taking police action when it's required. What we've done is we've impacted proactive policing. We've limited the officer's ability to put people on the wall, we called it when I was in gangs. We got four corners in our neighborhood. We got a beat. Mike and I are working a beat. On that beat, we got four hot spots, four hot corners. There's 5 to 10 people on those corners that we know are busy making money, selling narcotics, carrying guns. They got a long history. We know them. They're third generation. We've been here for 20 years. We know their entire family. We now cannot put them on the wall without putting together a 2-page document. Each one of those corners turns into 8 pages or 10 pages. And we've got four of those corners. We're doing 32, 40 pages a day. Every time we stop somebody, we got to fill out this document. In the meantime, we have four jobs waiting for us when we hit the car. We leave 5 jobs for the next crew, and we're taking 15 calls for service in the meantime. You can't expect that. But people that don't police want that done. When I was in Springfield, we talked about it, yes? And we said, you can't do this. It's going to impact policing to a level that we're going back to the days when I was in gang crime, so we had over 900 murders a year. They got it. They said, how could this happen? Why? What's the correlation of this document to those numbers? Just explained it to you. I explained it to them. They kicked the document. It came back to Chicago. And December 30th, I got the document. It was going online 2 days later. We are down over 150,000 street stops. Even more because these documents are required to be filled out when you arrest someone. So some of those numbers that are coming out for these street stops are from arrest slips. We've got to reexamine this. If you don't take the corner back, or if you give them the corner back, you lose the corner, you lose the block, you lose the block, you lose the community, and we're at 900. We're almost going to probably get to 700 this year. We're at 328 murders so far. We had 13 people shot in a 10-hour period yesterday. We have in Orlando every month in Chicago. And no one seems to raise an eyebrow. But catch a policeman hitting somebody on a video, oh my God. The world's upside down. Thank you very much for your time.
We have a series of questions. However, I have to say that as you started off, I thought this was the Chicago version of Blue Bloods. I mean, you have to crowd. Okay, Sherry Rauner, Chicago Urban League, right over there, Sherry. Would the FOP, in cases of police misconduct, be willing to create a fund to pay settlements instead of the taxpayers of Chicago? That's not like starting off with an easy one.
Well, that's an easy one, right?
Yeah, there you go.
I don't believe it's the FOP's responsibility to do that. I don't think that the FOP has the funding to do that, nor do our dues go towards that type of a fund, set-aside fund. So the simple answer would be no.
Okay. This comes from John Lagg. Daughter is a Roosevelt University student, which pushes him way up.
Type.
He just did it real fast. He's from John Marshall, a law school. They say that wisdom comes with age. A lot of people in this room would disagree with that from me. What is the best advice you received as a young police officer from your father? And what is the best advice you can give younger officers, including your son? That's a good question.
That's a good question. I can tell you exactly. It's right at the top of my head. I know what he told me. I don't know if you remember this, Dad. Keep your eyes open, your ears open, your mouth shut, and your hands in your own pockets, and you won't have too many problems. Right? And that's what I told my son.
Talk about a setup question. That was pretty good. And it was typed. All above board here. Congresswoman Robin Kelly. I am from a family of two New York City police officers, two nephews that are Chicago police officers. I agree that hopelessness and lack of opportunity and lack of federal gun laws are a problem, but what responsibility does the Chicago Police Department take for the negative relationship and the lack of trust? What can we do to heal?
Thanks. There are sections of our society that have never trusted the police and will never trust the police. I don't know what we could possibly do to bridge that gap. I think that there is an element out there right now that wants to continually mix the pot. I saw it during the primary elections. It was more about the politics than it was about peace and about communication. When you get people in a room to communicate, you can't start screaming. And I've just watched one of the police board meetings from last week, Thursday, I think, and it turned almost into a riot. And this was at police headquarters. So these are the same young kids, or everybody's getting to be a kid to me, but it's the same young people that want to talk about getting trust and building trust, and it turns into a fight. So at some point, people need to stand down, sit down, and start talking things out. And until that happens, I think we're still going to be where we're at.
We have a very good question from Lee Mitchell, affiliation. Individual. Never be too careful when you're at the City Club. Okay. You've talked all... Are we using pencils? Tweed, we want pens. You've talked about the level of confrontation and disrespect that officers are faced with. I agree. But is there anything officers and FOP should take responsibility for? Is it all the public's fault? Softball for you.
Well, I was going to play a Paul Harvey video that we couldn't hook up. And in that video, it talks about, everybody remembers Paul Harvey, right? It was from 1970, but it rings true today, that there is less than 0.5% of police officers that tarnish the uniform. And he goes on to say that's less of a percent of problems within our clergy. Do we have individuals that I don't want my son in a squad car with? Sure. Are we responsible for that behavior? That's that adult person's choice to behave that way. Do we defend officers when they get written up or when they get disciplined? We do to a point, and that is up to the department to recognize behaviors that need to be adjusted, because discipline is designed to adjust behavior. When they don't, you have somebody that's still out there. So wherever you're at, I hope that answers your question, the individual.
Okay, here's a homer for you. Michael Carroll, Chicago police officer and FOP member. It's a setup, you know what I'm saying. If there was one thing important to you and the FOP that is often not covered in the media, what would it be?
Thanks, Mike. It's that we're human. We're just like everybody else. We take care of, you know, sick parents. We go to service on the weekends. We coach Little League. We got soccer moms, hockey dads. And what people think is that we fall out of the sky somewhere and we land on top of them. We're called to your door, generally, and we are assigned to that job that you're physically at. We don't just fall out of the sky. We don't get made on some distant planet. We're just like everybody else. We have bills, we have mortgages, we have tuitions, and most of us have several jobs. So it's the humanization of policing, I think, that I would like to get shared more. So people recognize that we're just like everybody else, just a different job.
Here's a real tough one for you. I think you know this person. Kathy Moore, where is your hand, Kathy?
Oh, thanks.
This may be the last time we see you. Kathy's question is, do we have to return to the office after lunch?
Not if I get my other thumb drive out and we go into phase two. We'll have to talk about that. Thanks, Dor.
I believe the Latin word, that question took a lot of chutzpah. All right, here we go. Here we go. Now we have because this is the City Club, and this is a question from the Chicago Fire Department. Easy. Lieutenant Jim Aldworth. Now, Jim, I read your question both sides. Could you summarize it? Where are you, Jim? Just summarize. Stand up and just summarize it. Great question. The question is, given the fact that not that the current media that are here would never do that, but that sometimes when you're speaking is edited and you have to be careful for what you say, sort of like being chairman of the City Club, how do you deal with that and have police officers try and speak forthrightly without getting themselves in real trouble? I forgot what the form was when I was there, but there was a form you got to fill out, and you don't want to do that. Go right ahead.
Well, in 2016, I think things have changed a lot. I think you have a lot of younger officers coming in, a lot more education. We were talking about going to the academy and asking our recruits how many have their degrees. More than half the room, their hand goes up. It's not 1954 anymore. There are cell phones out there. There are officers that have a lot on their mind. I don't think it talks about or limits them as far as their talking goes. We have some very open debates with some of the younger officers. As far as the relationship with the department, you know, that's one thing that we wanted to work with the Department of Justice when they came in, is to help facilitate meetings at our building so the officers wouldn't be ostracized if they were in the commander's office for more than 15 minutes and everyone would be, what did you say, how long? Why were you in there that long? So we're trying to encourage that. We're trying to get people to participate, and it's just a comfort zone. And I think sometimes it comes with seniority.
Okay. The last question, saving this one for last because don't need to ask any more. This is from Ted Manuel. Ted, where are you? Typed. We're getting a lot of typed questions, I want to tell you. Take it easy on this one, Dean. Okay, here we go. Chicago is in the midst of trying to restore faith in this police department by instituting openness and transparency. How can that be done unless provisions in the police work contract are eliminated that shield wrongdoing cops from justice? Remember, this is named Emmanuel, not Franzic, right? We got that straight. Okay. Problems include, one, the mandated 24-hour delay in cops reporting incidents. I don't know if that's true or not. You could respond. That they were involved in. Two, discarding records of misbehavior older than 5 years in the past. Thank God, etc. How do you respond, sir?
Okay, the first one, 24 hours. It's been kicked around that our officers do not make statements to anybody within a 24-hour period following a police-involved shooting, and that's not accurate. They are on the scene talking to the officer in charge, the OIC, we call it. They are on the scene talking to the detectives. They are talking to the state's attorneys. Representatives. The 24-hour component of our contract is related to the IPRA statement that IPRA invites the officers down to their building to make a statement. I can tell you for a fact that we have officers that are months and months post-incident that are still waiting for IPRA to call them to do an interview. It's not our contract that made that delay. It's the IPRA investigation that's delayed. So, but it does, it did grab a bunch of headlines. But it's, again, it's because people don't realize what our contract offers and what it, where its limitations are. The federal government has a 72-hour segregated type of delay before they give an interview. Other agencies have a 48-hour timeout. We have a 24-hour. So I don't think it's completely off the wall, and I don't think that it is something that's overly limiting to the investigation, but it's the perception that was planted by people that thinks, oh my God, they can't say anything for 24 hours. It's just not true.
How about the second one?
The 5 year file destruction. When I came into office, I found out that those files were not being destroyed, and we tried to take the city to task to do what they were supposed to have done years since it was in the first contract in 1981 when John Dineen wrote that first 50-pager. And they had never destroyed those records. I can tell you I've got a copy of the records they want to release. John Dineen is on it from 1967. What the heck does anybody need a 79-year-old man's disciplinary record? And it's not even a disciplinary record. It's an allegation of wrongdoing. What importance does that have to anybody? When you look at the allegations and you look at sustained allegations, there's a big difference. When something's proved, it stays. When something's alleged, it needs to go. And the reason why is because when you're looking at an individual officer for advancement or sensitive assignment to a narcotics or an undercover type of a unit, you look at their disciplinary history. You look at the allegations, the type of allegations, and you look at the sustained allegations, and you take them out of the pile. It's unfair to have an officer's allegations stay on their file forever and then have that adversarially impacting their assignment in the future, whether it's a meritorious appointment to detective or sergeant, or whether it's an assignment to a sensitive unit. And that's what people don't realize. These are allegations. If you work in the busier parts of Chicago, in the most violent neighborhoods, in one of the most violent cities in the nation, whether you admit it or not, you're going to get allegations of misconduct against you. People don't want to go to jail. People don't want to lose somebody else's narcotics that you're inventorying. It's not theirs. They're selling it for somebody. They don't want to get their car towed, and they don't want to have to pay a lawyer or sit in jail for 3 weeks until they get their bond hearing. So what do? Dean Angelo beat me. Dean Angelo cuffed me too tight. Dean Angelo, we've had one where the officer was walking into the house disrespectfully. My God, they took the allegation because they got to take them all. And that should be in its file forever. So we have to look at the type of allegations. We have to look at the sustained allegations. And if it's part of litigation, it stays forever anyway. But again, it's because people don't realize what the contract does and doesn't do. I hope that answers your question.
Great answer. How about a round of applause? Well done.
Thank you.